Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
I drew more lines in my head last night and this morning. But before I'd created a satisfactory picture, we had a caller. I barked twice when the door chime sounded, because it was expected of me. The master went to the door and I followed. A tall, solidly built man, dark-haired, was on the step and he smiled. "Hello," he said. "My name's Larry Talbot. I'm your new neighbour and I thought I'd come by and pay my respects." "Won't you come in and have a cup of tea with me?" Jack said. "Thank you." Jack led him into the parlour and seated him, excused himself and went to the kitchen. I stayed in the parlour and watched. Talbot glanced several times at the palm of his hand.
"What? Larry Talbot? I thought we were using proxies."
"I think the Count is the actual Count Dracula. The 1890s timing seems right for that alongside Jack the Ripper and Sherlock Holmes. But the witch is a generic witch.
Yeah.
And Rasputin, I thought the time would be right for that, but I looked up when he was born. He'd be in his 20s technically around this time, so that's a bit of a stretch. The good doctor, I don't know how that could be Dr. Frankenstein, because his story happened about 100 years before in the 18th century. And then Larry Talbot, he's the Wolfman, but from the Universal film, which came out in 41, and I think is set in that era, so this doesn't make sense either. Other than, as we established on numerous werewolf episodes, the Wolfman film is the definitive werewolf text, you know, rather than any novel. So he's just the most famous Wolfman. If you want to have a Wolfman show up in human form and let people know who he is, you're going to say, "Hey, I'm Larry Talbot," and then we know the deal.
Right.
All of which is to say, I don't think this book is nonfiction.
Oh.
We should say which book we're talking about.
This book is the Roger Zelazny novel, A Night in Lonesome October.
And that reading was from the 8th chapter of the book, which is where we are now, covering it here on Strange Studies of Strange Stories. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey. You are joining us here on Patreon because you're awesome. So welcome, subscribers.
The Wolfman, one of my favorite movies, so I was excited to see Larry Talbot enter the scene. I was also excited to hear that reader a moment ago.
Our reader is Jason Rainbird.
Yes.
He had a Halloween costume on. I told you that last week. He wears a fun Halloween costume every week to our game.
Mm-hmm.
So he was sexy Frankenstein's monster this time.
Is that right?
I'm a little disappointed because he went with tights, wearing green tights for his hot pants that he usually wears with that. Instead of, normally he spray paints his legs green.
Yeah.
But he did the makeup effects on tights. Didn't have quite the same effect.
Some people are into tights.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an aesthetic choice, really.
Yeah.
And he's allowed to do that. But overall, very impressed. It was a great outfit.
Well, that's fantastic. Let's do a quick summary of where we are to date on this novel.
Our story so far is told by a dog named Snuff, who is the familiar to a wizard who goes by the name Jack. Jack seems to be a stand-in for Jack the Ripper, but maybe not. Jack has a number of otherworldly things trapped in household objects in his house.
Vaguely Lovecraftian things, and you know they're Lovecraftian because the T in thing is capitalized.
Yes.
And I thought maybe this was as specific as the Lovecraft stuff would get, but we'll find out in this episode, no.
There's a grand game going on between the openers and the closers. We're not sure what the game is about yet, but we've got some of the players of the game. Jack is with Snuff the dog. Crazy Jill, the witch, with Grey Malk the cat. Morris and McCab, which are kind of Burke and Hare stand-ins. They're with Nightwind the owl. Rastov, kind of our Rasputin, is with Quicklime the snake.
Who lives in Rastov's belly part of the time, which is kind of disturbing.
Was that what was going on? I thought it was in his coat.
When they set it up, I think they said that the snake lives in his belly part-time when they set up that character.
How does that work?
He swallows him and the snake hangs out in his stomach.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if Quicklime always wants to be doing that, as we'll discover.
So the Count, Dracula, we assume, he's got Needle the Bat, Owen the Druid, with Cheater the Squirrel, and the good Dr. Frankenstein with Bubo the Rat. But we're not sure that that's all of them, because also floating around is the Great Detective and his companion, and now we have Larry Talbot, a.k.a. the Wolfman.
If you watch the Wolfman, Larry also likes to spy on his female neighbors with a telescope, so he's there to represent Peeping Toms as well as werewolves. As the gypsy sorceress Maleva says in the movie, "As a man, he's creeping and peeping. As a wolf, he's loping and scoping." I think that's from that movie.
I think you're right. There's also been a murder, but we're not sure who was killed or by whom.
Yeah, some kind of non-Jack the Ripper murder has happened because he doesn't know who did it either.
Into chapter 8, we have Larry Talbot paying Jack a visit.
Every chapter is a day in the month of October, so we'll start here on October 8th since we did the first seven. But by the way, we originally just split the month into quarters. We're going to do eight chapters a show. But as Chris discovered by using the novel investigative method of actually reading the book, some chapters are longer than others. So we're going to go all the way up to October 21st in this episode in order to get halfway through.
As we heard at the top, Larry has introduced himself to Jack and Snuff. He and Jack have a pleasant conversation, but a crash can be heard from upstairs. The thing from the wardrobe has broken free and Snuff growls it back inside while Jack latches the door shut. Jack says that Snuff is an exemplary watchdog. A lot of positive reinforcement there. Just then, Larry comes up the stairs asking if everything's all right. Jack makes excuses and they return down for some tea. Larry offers Jack support, but Jack is puzzled.
Yeah, he says, if you ever need help, you can count on me. But they don't really know if he's even in the game.
Yeah.
He does say, good dog you've got there, knows how to close a door. So it seems like he knows about the game. He also knows that they are closers.
Right.
Which I think means good guys.
Yes. I've read further in the book. I'm close to the end now, and I could definitively say that closers are the good guys.
All right.
Larry leaves, and Snuff shadows him as he walks back to his house.
Larry doesn't seem to have a familiar like all the others. Snuff thinks, well, maybe he's his own best friend.
Some footsteps come up behind Snuff, and it's the druid Owen. He offers Snuff a piece of meat, but Snuff can smell strange things in it, so he takes it but doesn't eat it, and then he goes and buries it under a tree. Quicklime the snake, Rastoff's pet, is there, and he says, well done. That guy was trying to poison you. Quicklime states that it's a bit early in the game to eliminate players, not until after the death of the moon. So he tells Snuff that Greymalk is trapped in a well, and McCab threw her in.
Seems like the players are getting ahead of themselves. And when they say death of the moon, I assume they mean the new moon when you can't see it that one night. But familiars are obviously trying, you know, they're trying to kill familiars right now.
They're not
supposed to be doing that.
So Snuff leaves Quicklime and heads over to Crazy Jill's and finds Greymalk in the well. So he lowers a bucket down to her. She thanks him for the rescue and she's off.
As he's rescuing her, Snuff says to the reader, if you've ever tried turning a crank with your paws, you know it's rough work. So that reveals that the book is actually for dog readers, which shocks me.
Yeah.
We're not even the intended audience of this book.
No, that makes sense. October 9th, Jack and Snuff are out looking for more ingredients when they run into the great detective and his companion on the street. The detective asks him for a light and casually grills Jack about the murder that happened nearby. Jack plays it cool, mostly because he doesn't really know anything about it. They part ways and they run into Larry Talbot on the street. Larry informs Jack that there was another killing that evening, so they walk back to their homes together. He tells them that the Count is in town, which they already knew, and that he thinks he's an opener. Snuff recalls that Greymalk checked out the crypt that Bubo told them about, and it did have a coffin in it, but no mirror.
And I think maybe the absence of a mirror just confirms that he's a Dracula.
Yeah.
I'm only as far into the book as we're going today. You said you've read a little further. But this friendship between Snuff and Greymalk seems to grow with every chapter. Mm-hmm. He's brought her inside. He's shown her the things he's guarding in the mirror. I'm worried, you know, don't tell me, but I'm worried that Greymalk and Crazy Jill will be openers and this relationship between the dog and the cat is going to be rent asunder when the game gets underway. I don't know yet, but I did go to bed worried about it last night.
October 10th, Snuff makes the rounds and the house is quiet.
It's a rainy day.
He then sees a puddle of water slowly making its way to the circle that contains the thing that keeps turning into sexy dogs. Snuff jumps into the puddle and rolls around in it, soaks it up with his fur so it doesn't drip into that magic circle.
Which would have helped the thing get out, I guess, if it had gotten access to some water.
It seemed really important, so yeah. I assume so, yeah. Snuff lets Jack clean it up and then he goes out to check on the houses. The druid has some wicker baskets at his place. Snuff then goes over to the doctor's place. Lots of thunder and lightning, hitting lightning rods. And inside, he sees the doctor bringing the monster to life, still on the slab. Snuff, after that, makes himself scarce.
Yeah, this creature's twitching underneath the sheet as the lightning flashes. It's like this is just happening right now, which is a little odd because Larry Talbot's already a werewolf. Dracula's already in England. It seems like they're characters whose stories have already happened and they've survived them somehow to come play this game. So is the doctor just moving from town to town and making a monster in each town? Or is this the first time? I wasn't quite sure what was going on there.
We're not sure what's going on. No, they don't really explain it ever either. I mean, this could be a young Frankenstein deal where the original Victor Frankenstein, because we never get a name. He never says Frankenstein.
Yeah. I think it is a young Frankenstein deal because there's just no getting around the timeline.
Yeah. If you got to make it work.
If you have to make it. Well, I wanted to try and make it work with Larry Talbot by thinking maybe this is one of his, you know, because in The Wolfman, he shows up to reconcile with his father from America, and his father's Claude Rains, who's English. But he doesn't become a werewolf because of genealogy. He gets bitten by Bela Lugosi. So that doesn't make sense either for it to be an ancestor.
Yeah. Going by Talbot's place, he finds very large dog footprints. He also sees Larry in a room full of plants, and he's talking to one of them.
Which made me wonder, is Larry's familiar like a Triffid or Audrey too? Maybe that's what's going on.
Snuff's trying to walk in straight lines from house to house, seeing what kind of pattern they create. When he's close to the crypt, a large bat flies overhead and then goes behind a tree, and out comes a man. It's the Count. He notices Snuff there, so Snuff has a gambit. He plays dumb happy dog. So he trots over, wagging his tail, doggy smiling at the Count, and the Count looks at him, and he smiles back, and he pats him on the head, and then he leaves. It worked.
His touch had been very cold. I think the Count isn't so easily fooled, though. I think he's just too badass to be worried about this dog. I think he was doing a little gambit, too. I'll make him think I'm one of those dog-friendly vampires.
Well, later on, we find out that the Count has got more than one place that he's sleeping in. So he might be allowing him to see that this is one of the places that he's staying.
Games within games.
October 11th, the next day, Snuff is over to the good doctor's place when he's spotted by the detective and his companion. He plays the dumb friendly dog game again, and the detective tells him to take them to where he lives. Of course, he's not really going to take them to where he lives. Since McCab threw Graymalk into the well, he decides he's going to take them over to Morris and McCab's place. So as they knock on the door, Snuff just kind of slinks away.
A little ding-dong ditch. Why are you here? I thought the dog took me here. We don't have a dog. But the detective isn't going to fall for it. No way, because he recognized Snuff from the streets of the city. He's got all kinds of injuries from past adventures with Jack that are hinted at here and there, and the detective remarks on them, so I'm sure he wasn't so easily deceived either.
So he tries to create more lines between places for the rest of the day, and that gets us into the 12th of October. Snuff gets wind from Graymalk the cat that night when the owl grabbed Quicklime the snake and threw him into the Thames after they had an argument. Quicklime was able to swim back to the shore, so he's fine, but you know, it's pretty intense stuff.
That's familiar on familiar violence.
It is. I hate it. Jack reads the newspaper to Snuff, detailing all the murders and arsons and grave robbings and things going on.
It is very pleasant just to be domestic sometimes. It was a funny chapter ending.
October 13th, in the evening, Needle the Bat comes to Snuff's house needing help. It seems the local vicar is after him. Vicar Roberts is convinced there is something unnatural in the neighborhood. Bodies found with no blood. People with anemia having dreams about bats. The vicar is running around the neighborhood with a crossbow looking for vampires.
This was a cool development. I thought maybe this would be a Van Helsing type, or because he's got this cool crossbow that fires stakes, maybe he's more like Quincy Harker from Tomb of Dracula, or like a Belmont hero from Castlevania.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
This book would make really fun source material for a video game if it hasn't already happened. It's got a ticking clock. It's got all the characters, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You could play the dog or the cat. But Snuff thinks Needle is on the level and lets the bat in since it's scared, feeding him some fruit, which is a really cute scene.
Just then, there's a knock at the door. Jack goes to answer it, and it's the vicar saying that Jack is harboring evil, and he wants to come in, but Jack's not going to let him in. Snuff introduces Needle to Jack, and Jack says that he can have sanctuary here. Needle tells Snuff that the vicar has shot at both Nightwind and Cheater, that's the owl and the squirrel. Seems the vicar has had visions of what's going on. He's in the know somehow, and Snuff wonders what busybody sent him visions. But they don't have any idea. They agree to all let their familiars know about the vicar.
Right, because this vicar is a menace to everybody. The character also of the vicar reminded me a bit of the Reverend character from The Vampire and the Werewolf by R. Chetwynd Hayes, who's a British author. We discussed way back on episode 197, the werewolf bonus track. We never covered any of his stuff specifically, although we said we would then. But he also played with these archetypical monsters in his fiction. He even did a story called The Gatecrasher, which is about the ghost of Jack the Ripper.
There you go.
But I see a lot of his influence here, just the affable nature of the writing, the meeting up of all the monsters. There's an anthology movie of his work from 81 called The Monster Club, has Vincent Price in it. And there's one from the 70s called From Beyond the Grave. He definitely influenced Zelazny in this text, I think. And it also reminded me, you know what? Gosh, I totally forgot, but we got to cover some of his stories. If you like this book, folks, you definitely can keep the party going this October if you want to grab some of his anthologies, because it's a lot of fun.
And that gets us to October 14th. Snuff goes to talk to Graymalk the cat, and she takes him to the body of a policeman. His throat has been cut.
This is a London police officer who rode into the countryside here to visit the local cop, Constable Terrence.
The body is very close to Jack's house, and them finding a murdered policeman so close will draw unwanted attention. Graymalk asks if it was Jack, as Jack has magical control over a certain ritual blade, but Snuff confirms it wasn't Jack. We also find out that the druid has a magical sickle, and that Rastov has an icon drawn by the mad Arab who had given up Islam. Jill has a broom, and he thinks the Count has the ring, and the good doctor has the bowl.
More video game-like, right? There's these relics. But his point being that anybody could have murdered the policeman. Don't profile Jack just because he's a serial killer. I thought that was a cool reveal that Rastov apparently has this symbol given to him, we can assume, by Abdul al-Hazred, the author of the Necronomicon.
Right.
And one thing that we shouldn't lose sight of, you and I, as we're reading this, is that, you know, we've been so deep in this stuff doing the show the last 13 years, aside from having personal interest in it, that, you know, if I'd been reading this in 1993, I would have been so excited by all these references. It wouldn't have just been, we know what that is. I would have been like, guys, I'm reading this book and they referenced the Necronomicon in it. What is this?
Yeah, it gets pretty deep into the Lovecraftian stuff later. Snuff knows the body can't be found here, so he decides that he's going to try and drag it all the way to the Thames, but it's far. So he's going to have to drag it in stages, drag and hide the body, then continue later on. He's able to drag it some ways, but then stashes it for the night.
It was funny to me that this book flies through so much information so fast, but disposal of a body by a dog, we're going to take a lot of time with that. And you know, as a plot device, though, it does put some tension in place that I think was needed at this point, because we know so little of what is going on, it's hard for you to really commit to the story. But I did not want this dog to get caught.
That's one of my issues with this so far, has been that it starts off really slow.
Yeah.
Nothing is really happening at all.
Yeah.
But further along you get in the book, it all kind of starts paying off. Things really start happening and it gets pretty intense. So look forward to that, Chad. October 15th.
Something to look forward to.
Needle the Bat comes by Jax and says that the vicar was out last night with a crew of people with crossbows.
He's recruited some angry townspeople, which is awesome. Just the other day, you and I were talking about which Universal movies kids might like, because you were thinking of showing some to your boys. And the thing is, a lot of folks will start with Dracula. Mm. I love that movie, but it's a slow one. And I think you have to have a decent grip on the period to understand why it might have been scary at the time, rather than just funny with rubber bats flying around. If anybody's asking, my recommendation are The Invisible Man and definitely The Wolf Man, because both just fly by as films. Bride of Frankenstein as well, which you could watch without the first movie if you need to, because it sums up the first movie in the beginning. I doubt this is information the audience actually needs, but here it is if you need it.
I do need it. Now, Snuff goes out to do some corpse dragon, and Grey Malk, the cat, comes by. She tells him that the chief inspector and the great detective are on the case together, maybe looking for this missing policeman. She also says that the great detective noticed that there were arrows stuck into the side of his house, something Snuff forgot to mention to Jack.
Those were fired into the house by the vicar when he was chasing Needle in the earlier chapter.
That's right. In the evening, Jack and Snuff go out into the city, and there's a lot of policemen swarming about. He sees all the players are out on the town. Strangely, Morris is dressed up as a woman on McCab's arm. I guess as a disguise, or maybe not?
I think that's just how they roll. That's how they do the town up. Yeah.
That's cool.
He also sees Rastov hanging out in a pub alone with a bottle of vodka, and he worries about Quicklime, because he thinks if he's in his stomach right now, that snake's getting drunk.
Wow. He really is in his stomach. That's crazy. He also sees a guy with an eye patch and a limp selling pencils, but Snuff sees, well, he smells right through the disguise. Mm-hmm. It's the great detective.
He's got that advantage because his primary sense is smell. You know, I devoured all the Sherlock Holmes stories, and his disguise work was always the bit I was the most skeptical of. I think Zelazny knew that and decided to really lean into it just to get my goat.
Oh boy, does he. Now, while they look for what they need, Jack gets tailed by the police and Larry shows up and hides him in a nearby room. Jack's package is leaking and Larry has a towel ready to go. And Larry confesses that he has a way of anticipating things. So eventually they're able to get back home, and that gets us into October 16th. In the morning, Snuff finds a dead bat pinned to a tree by an arrow, but it's not Needle. The vicar's monster slayers are out slaying whatever they can get their hands on, basically.
Think of all the innocent bats they're probably killing. Snuff also comes across Quicklime, who is lying on a rock, severely hungover. So he was in Rastov's belly. Snuff helps him out, drags him somewhere more comfortable to get over it. Drink lots of liquids, let the sun sweat it out. It is a drunk snake. Later, Snuff sees Jack and Larry walking together. They've been brought to the constable's office, as it seems most of the players have over the course of the day, to get interrogated about the murders, and the vicar's there, which makes them both crazy, because what has he got to do with this?
Yeah.
But everybody's playing innocent. Seems like they're getting away with it. Jack asks Larry, you know, what's your deal? And Larry says, I'm really about the anticipation of things. Mm. He's like an anticipator, whatever that means. He could see where things are going, but in terms of what his role is in the game, we don't really know.
That gets us to October 17th. It's the new moon. The game really starts, and the players will start to reveal themselves as openers or closers. Jack and Snuff head to the graveyard, but everyone is out there looking for different parts in the dark. And then they start shouting out to one another, anyone need a foot? Oh, I do. I got a skull to trade. You know, that kind of thing that they're doing.
It's a really crazy scene. And the Gain Wilson illustration of body parts flying across the sky is one of the weirdest ones in the book so far. Sometimes the illustrations tip you off to what's going to happen in the chapter, but not that time. I looked at that one of what is happening.
What is going on?
The way everybody's helping each other out before they get into the competition, though, it almost felt like when everybody's cooking in like the Great British Bake Off or something. They're competing, but they're also building some solidarity because they're all in that game together. It's like good sportsmanship. And I think that's what, this is the last time they can be nice to each other. So they're being very nice.
So October 18th, poor old Snuff is out there trying to drag this dead policeman to the Thames across London without being caught by the police or the Vickers Monster Hunters or anybody really. And it's hard work. Then a giant wolf appears.
When he realizes it's a wolf and not just a big dog, Snuff says, "I quickly reviewed my knowledge of the submissive postures these guys are into as I backed away," which just made me laugh that these guys are into.
But he's friendly because he's Larry Talbot.
Yes.
He can talk to Snuff when he's in this wolf form. Snuff points out that it's not the full moon, and Larry explains with the help of certain herbs, he can change whenever he wants and be able to control himself. It's only during the full moon that he goes nuts.
Okay, so maybe that's all the plants are. It's not a Triffid scenario.
No.
I don't know yet.
Unfortunately. Larry helps Snuff drag the body to the Thames. And by help, I mean he easily does it by himself because he's a huge werewolf.
Yeah.
After that, Larry wants to show Snuff something. It's almost midnight and they head to the church. They sneak in the back door and there's a service going on, but it's dark and there are black candles and the cross is turned upside down. The vicar is doing some unusual readings.
Nihil athotep, he read, cometh leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. He is like the many-legged goat, and he standeth behind our wall. He looketh forth at the windows, showing himself through the lattice, horned in glory. Nihil athotep spake, and he said, rise up, my dark one, and come away. For lo, the winter is nigh, and the cold rains fall. The flowers have died upon the earth, and the singing of birds is done. The turtle lies slain. The fig tree withers, as do the grapes. Arise, my dark one, and come away.
So the vicar's a player.
Yeah, right? he's a Lovecraftian, you know, I'm sure this would be David Warner in the movie. Yeah. He's the priest of Nihil athotep, or the actual elder gods. And that surprised me. I don't know why. I didn't know it was going to get that deep into it.
Well, and I didn't expect to. I thought they were having him be the sort of the antagonist because he was a holy man. But
yeah, me too. Yeah.
He's in the game. Larry the werewolf asks Snuff if the vicar's presence in the game changes things. He knows Snuff is good at figuring out these lines and understanding the pattern. Larry wants to know the center ground, the place of manifestation. Snuff explains he has to know if Larry's part of the game, but Larry doesn't know. He says he's an anticipator. He has visions of the future, but they're unclear. He also says he's on Snuff's side, but on the night, he'll be out of his mind because it'll be a full moon, so he doesn't know what he'll be doing. So he could be helping ultimately or hurting ultimately.
He's the wild card.
Yeah. Snuff goes on with his doggy thinking on that spot, and he ponders all that he's learned.
Obviously, everything's pointing towards wherever the center of this is going to be. That's where whatever this manifestation is going to happen. That's why Snuff is tracing all their dwellings, and if people keep showing up and disappearing from the game, that makes it difficult to know where things are going to go so crazy on Halloween. So interesting. It's a mathematical problem a dog is trying to solve, which is an interesting premise for a plot.
October 19th, Snuff hears a big commotion outside, and it's a group of Roma, which they call gypsies in the story. I'm a little confused on the word gypsy because I've been told that it is derogatory because they thought they were Egyptian, but they're the Roma people.
It can also be used as an adjective to mean somebody who's free-spirited and not be associated with where you're from at all. We've actually talked about this before. I don't think it's as loaded as all that. We were talking about it back on episode 573 when we were covering the Shining Pyramid. Mm-hmm. And we got this message from James Kundart, which said, as your token Slovak Roma listener, Chad is right.
Oh, there we go.
I take no offense at the G word. It might be more than a little Lovecraftian that we have a white male cat named Gypsy, just to see who we can offend in the name of my great-grandmother's people. After all, if Lady Gaga and Kermit the Frog can sing a song entitled Gypsy, why can't we all?
There you go. So these people are heading to Larry Talbot's. What does this mean?
The dog watches them set up camp, mostly just because it's kind of colorful. Yeah. You know, it's diverting.
Snuff runs into Quicklime, the snake, and he says the Count also has Roma with him as well. He's known to be working with these people. So does that mean that Larry and the Count are in cahoots?
I also felt like these are an opposite force to the townspeople. Town folk are the angry mob. And then on the other side, it's always the gypsies and the carnies. They're the ones that are kind of on the side of the monsters. Yeah. I'm just thinking about this in video game terms now. Like, who are all the NPCs that are going to be running around?
They also consider the idea that the Count might have multiple residences, and that can screw up this pattern that Stuff's trying to understand.
Which was a great reveal, because it seemed relatively easy to find the Count before.
Yeah.
Although it continues to be relatively easy to find.
They go to the old crypt and find that the Count and Needle are both sleeping inside.
Boom.
They try the old church, but it's a mess, and that doesn't seem like it could be a resting place. He tells Quicklime if Larry isn't a player and the vicar is, the center of the pattern is the old church. But if the Count has more than one sleeping place, they're going to need to figure out where that is, and it'll make the center some other location. But if Larry is a player, that swings things over to the old manse.
The old manse is this big old house that seems a pretty likely candidate to me.
So Snuff goes to check out what's happening at Larry's. A woman comes over who is friendly with Larry, and she's got a companion with her as well, another woman. Larry gives her some plant clippings, and then she leaves. Snuff goes to Larry, and he explains that she is Linda Enderby, widow of an old India officer. She's moved into the old manse that she is restoring. Snuff lets Larry know he was concerned about him, and he thanks him.
Larry is in human form this whole time, but because he's a werewolf, he can talk freely with Snuff. You know, we know Snuff can talk to Jack, but that's only between midnight and 1 a.m. There's no such restrictions between canine folk.
So after leaving, Snuff gets the scent of Lady Enderby, and it's not who she appears to be. She is, in fact, the great detective in disguise.
I am skeptical.
It also seems Lady Enderby came by Crazy Jill's as well and totally charmed her. So Snuff goes to the church and sees an albino raven flying around as Lady Enderby is paying a visit to the vicar.
The great detective is doing the rounds, clearly talking to everybody, figuring things out. Greymalk also lets Snuff know that the vicar was snooping around the side of the body after he'd moved it. So Greymalk suspects he's maybe the murderer.
Yes. So that gets us to October 20th. The next night, Greymalk and Snuff go to check out the old manse. They peer in and they see the great detective still in his dress, but smoking a pipe. Greymalk slips inside to look around. Nightwind, the owl, comes by and says that Lady Enderby is not a player, as his master met her the other night and confirms that the albino raven, in fact, belongs to the vicar, and her name is Tekela.
Which seems to be a little Mountains of Madness reference, Tekalili, Tekela.
Oh,
I was surprised that the Lovecraftian familiar wasn't a penguin or an octopus. But okay.
Tekela revealed to Nightwind that the cop was murdered in a ceremonial killing, which were dues for getting into the game later.
Yeah, the vicar needed like the extra power he could get from a sacrifice in order to catch up with everybody else.
Nightwind also says that there are three people at the Good Doctor's, not two. The doctor, his assistant, and the monster. Of course.
Yeah.
Nightwind leaves and Greymalk comes out of the manse out the back door with the great detective letting her out saying, good kitty, come visit us again in a falsetto voice.
Because he caught her stalking around, of course.
Yeah. So they go to the farmhouse of the good doctors and out walks a giant man. It's the monster. And he walks up to Snuff and pats him on the head and says, good dog. And then he grabs Greymalk way too hard and he pets her roughly and Snuff begins barking and the good doctor runs out and he gently tells the monster he's being too rough with the cat and to put her down. He does, and he looks at Snuff again and says, good dog. And then they both leave. Snuff and Greymalk run the heck out of there.
That was a pretty good scene, because in both Universal movies, that's what gets the monster into trouble, is not really knowing the boundaries of human contact.
Yes.
You know, in the first one, he throws the girl in the river. This, in Bride of Frankenstein, it's so frustrating because he saves a woman from drowning, and then she starts screaming when she sees him. And he's trying to shut her up, which, you know, monster hands, he's just choking her out, basically. It's, poor guy.
He's trying.
Yeah. On to October 21st. Now, Nightwind was asking about the big dog, which was actually Larry the werewolf. Snuff covered it by saying that he's just some random dog named Lucky. So he's defending Larry. He heads over to Larry's and says, hey, if anybody asks, you're Lucky. That's the lie I told for you.
But Snuff doesn't tell him about the true nature of Lady Enderby because he thinks Larry really likes her and doesn't want to ruin the relationship, I guess.
Well, also, it seems like they're sharing information so much and everybody knows anything. Any little clue that you have that you could keep to yourself, you should.
So he goes over to Quicklime, the snake's place, and sees that Rastov has been getting really drunk lately. And we find out that after the new moon, there are ways to find out if the players are openers or closers. So pretty soon, the game is going to get serious. Though they do try not to kill each other, there's always some killing that will happen. And we also learn that it's not usually a 50-50 split. They're usually more of one than the other.
If they kill enough of the other side off, they'll have an advantage before the night. But there's reference to like one time that nobody showed up.
Yeah.
Even though they were all tipping that they were going to, which wasn't a great idea because then one person could have taken over and yes. done what they wanted to do.
Quicklime tells Snuff that he ran into Nita last night. He tricked the bat into eating some fermented fruit and got him drunk and got him talking and learned the locations of all of the Count's sleeping places, three in total. Quicklime offers to take Snuff to them, and Quicklime also tells him the location of the Count's resting place before the new moon so that he can do his calculations.
He's a smart dog.
Yeah, he is. Snuff decides that Quicklime is a closer and reveals that he is as well. And they are. They're yeah. buddies. They're on the same team. They go to the Count's third resting place in the graveyard. They find a slightly moved slab, and they go down some steps and look into the coffin and discover that the Count has been staked. The game has gotten serious.
That sucks.
I know.
That made me really mad. I saw the illustration at the beginning of the chapter with the stake going through. That can't be true. They didn't get Dracula already, did they?
They got Dracula.
Oh, man.
Already. At this point, when he was dead, I go, oh, finally dawned on me that these are all cameos. All the characters aren't really big parts of the story. They're just kind of background players. It's all about the animals.
I had a dream that it would roll around and it'd be like Game of Thrones when they do viewpoint chapters. Suddenly right. it'd roll around and be like, I'm Dracula and here's what's up, bitches.
I thought that's what was going to happen too, but no.
I didn't really think that's what was going to happen, but I hoped because I f***ing love Dracula. I love Dracula.
I know you do, buddy. At dusk, he finds Grey Malk, who informs him that the vicar has a skull on his desk at the vicarage in the bowl, the one that Snuff thought that the doctor had. Grey Malk also tells Snuff that the vicar has his late wife's 13-year-old daughter chained up in the attic to be a sacrifice. Snuff tells her that the Count is out of the game and says that he has to do a new calculation for the location and he will share it with her when he does. They go over to Larry's and they see the Roma camp nearby and investigate. They see some older ladies dancing around the fire and some men as well. The detective is there in his disguise as Enderby and they ask him to play the fiddle and he does. He doesn't play Roma music, he plays some old folk song and he gets really into it.
Abruptly, he halted and took a step, as if suddenly moving out of a dream. He bowed then and returned the instrument to its owner, his movements in that moment entirely masculine. I thought of all the controlled thinking, the masterfully developed deductions which had served to bring him here. And then this momentary slipping into the wildness he must keep carefully restrained, and then seeing him come out of it, smiling, becoming the woman again. I saw in this the action of an enormous will, and suddenly I knew him much better than as the pursuing figure of many faces. Suddenly, I knew that he had to be learning, as we were learning other aspects, of the scope of our enterprise. That he could well be right behind us at the end. That he was almost, in some way, a player, more a force, really, in the game. And I respected him as I have few beings of the many I've known. Later, as we walked back, Grey Malk said, "It was good to get away for a time." "Yes," I said, "it was." And I regarded the sky where the moon was growing.
That's about halfway through, so we're going to pause. As you say, a lot of stuff's about to go down.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited about. And I guess that I'm going to assume now we found out that the vicar, instead of being a foil to the monsters, is one of the monsters.
Yeah.
So it's really Sherlock here who's going to be the foil.
You'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to wait and see. You know things that I don't know.
Yeah, I've gotten into the book. So for me, it's just a matter of finding the time to actually just finish it and not a matter of going, oh, I got to read this book. Like, no. I want to finish it. I think I'll be able to finish it up tonight. I only got two more chapters left.
I think I'm going to try and do it over the weekend because I don't want to be, I don't want to feel dumb this way again. I want to catch up.
Once it starts rolling, it's pretty addictive. It gets to that point because it sets up everything in a very slow burn. And then as everything starts playing out, like you're like, whoa, oh, that's happening. Okay, whoa.
Oh, cool. Well, it's a good book because I have to admit, when you discovered, because I had read the next eight chapters and then you were like, dude, we got to read more than that. Some of these are a lot longer than others. It's like, oh, man, last night it was late. I had to read some more chapters of the book. And I didn't care. It was like really fun once I started doing it.
Yeah.
I like this one. You know who else I like is Jason Rainbird.
I love him. He's great. And he's a wonderful help. Thank you so much for doing this. He gets nothing out of it. He's just doing it for the sheer love of the show.
Really?
Yeah.
I would also like to thank some patrons. And I'm going to start by thanking Danny Staples.
Andrew Rails, thank you.
Andrew Slater, thank you.
Connor McNamara, thank you.
Michael Cunliffe, thank you so much.
I'd like to thank John Burkle.
Josh Olson, thank you.
Eric Marchand, thank you.
Mr. Standfast, thank you.
And lastly, Sludge Crawler, thank you so much.
You guys are the best. We're going to be back with more Roger Zelazny next week and find out what's going on with this game. Until then, I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lack, and you've been listening to Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Exclusively on Patreon.
Strange Studies of Strange Stories.